Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hi, I'm David Ross, and welcome to episode 3 of The Sun's new podcast, Israel's War on Terror. Well, in the wake of Hamas's October 7th massacre on southern Israel and the murders of 1,400 Israelis, Israel has vowed to completely destroy the terror group. The first phase of the IDF's operation to do that has been from the air, with an aerial bombardment of terror infrastructure in Gaza. In the last few days, there have been targeted raids using tanks ahead of an expected full ground invasion. Earlier, I spoke with Dr. Matthew Levitt, director of the Reinhardt Program on Counterterrorism and Intelligence at the Washington Institute. He explained that the biggest challenge could be Hamas's so-called Gaza Metro, an underground 311-mile maze of tunnels.
The single most significant thing that it's going to face is Hamas's network of tunnels. Israeli officials sometimes refer to this as the Gaza Metro, but it's not a metro like civilians are using it. It is a series of intricate tunnels, not small tunnels. You can even go online and see videos of militants driving motorcycles through them with multiple turnoffs in different places that are intended to be able to move people and weaponry, store weaponry outside of the view of Israeli overhead surveillance. And to be able, once if Hamas were to do something as it did to try and draw Israel into the Gaza Strip, which is definitely what its strategy was about, it would be able to set up multiple sophisticated ambushes of IDF soldiers in an effort to inflict additional losses and to then grab as many bodies of killed soldiers, wounded soldiers, to have more individuals and corpses to negotiate over.
How much of a tactical advantage does this give Hamas in what is often described as asymmetric warfare?
So this is an advantage to Hamas militants when you're working in a tight urban area and you are in a defensive position as people are coming in to liberate that territory. But it's not something that is can't be overcome. It's something that means that these Israelis will incur losses. It helps explain a lot of the aerial bombardment that you've seen over the past 2 weeks. The Israelis are trying to take out as much munitions, certain types of munitions, but also key parts of the tunnel as possible. They've reportedly been interrogating some of the Hamas operatives who crossed into Israel who were captured, not killed, and reportedly have collected some more information on the tunnels. And I think that the time it takes to deal with that advance is one reason why you're seeing a delay in the ground campaign. And the other is because there's a tremendous amount of diplomatic maneuvering going on over the fate of the over 200 hostages who remain in captivity. The hostages are the second most complicated thing for the Israeli military. To the extent possible, of course, you don't want to kill your own or kill citizens of other countries. But that is very, very difficult. And Israel feels that it's in a basically existential conflict right now to protect its citizenry, much, much more than 200 people. But to the extent you can, you want to try and avoid those casualties.
Just how much pressure will there be on the Israeli military from other countries with consideration to their hostages?
So far, I have not seen publicly any country that has hostages putting significant restraint on what Israel needs to do, in part because, unfortunately for Israel, it has more experience in these types of situations and success rate in securing the release of hostages than just about anybody else. So they will clearly do whatever can be done diplomatically, and they seem quite obviously to be willing to delay the ground campaign to do that. That campaign will not be delayed indefinitely. Anybody who doesn't understand that after this type of an invasion, this type of butchery and pogroms, that the Israelis are going to need to us from governance in Gaza doesn't understand the level of trauma, national trauma here, the fact that these communities on the Israeli side were all on the left of the political spectrum, secular. These were the most pro-peace of Israeli society, and these were the ones who were killed so brutally. So on this, there's no disagreement within Israeli society, as much as people really do want this to happen in a way that minimizes casualties on both sides. And so it's telling that Hamas is preventing people from evacuating the north.
Just how vast is this tunnel network? How does Israel destroy it? And also, how have Hamas been able to build it?
This is believed to be very, very extensive. There are all kinds of estimates as to how many, many miles long. Nobody really knows. But it is absolutely clear that it crisscrosses the urban areas of the Gaza Strip. Are they connected to an urban area to an urban area? Maybe a few, but I think doubtful. But they are very extensive and have multiple branches in urban areas. So if you shut down one branch, you might not shut down all of it. These are expensive to build. I have been in several Hamas tunnels, not the ones internal to Gaza, but ones that were built east into Israel for the purpose of carrying out attacks. I've been to, I think, at least five or six of them. And whereas the early ones were built with wood paneling and they were quite short and a flat roof that would typically cave in because that's not particularly good physics, in time they built tunnels that had prefabricated cement walls and cement domed ceilings where you barely had to bend over to go in, with electricity and phone lines and tracks to be able to put a cart on so that you could fill that cart with dirt, connect it to a steel cable that is on an electric pulley system, and you wouldn't even have to break a sweat taking that stuff out. Very sophisticated, very deep. Those tunnels were estimated costing between $2 and $3 million each. These are much, much longer tunnel systems. It gives you a little bit of the sense of the fraud that Hamas was perpetrating on its own people, taking money from taxes, extorting the population, taking cuts from international humanitarian aid, from salaries that Qatar was paying, etc., using money that was supposed to go to the needs of these civilians, and instead investing and prioritizing the building of military infrastructure. These are not impossible to deal with. The Israelis have been trying to collect intelligence about this for some time. Despite the intelligence failure in terms of the raid, which is significant, it's a different type of intelligence collection, different types of sources and methods that might go into trying to understand the tunnel system. And I think it's fair to assume they probably have some good information. They don't know everything. But I think that this explains in part when you see really disturbing pictures of, you know, a road that's been bombed out between two apartment buildings. And why would they hit a road? People will say there's no offices there. It's kind of hard to know if there are offices there or not. But typically, the issue is what's beneath the road that they're trying to target. And if they can block off enough of the tunnel system, they can make it more difficult for Hamas to take advantage of it.
And this is one of the reasons why Israel has been so reticent to allow certain kinds of aid into Gaza since their response to Hamas's terror attack began.
That's true. A tremendous amount of material that goes into Gaza typically comes from and through Israel, more than what comes in through Egypt, the Erez crossing. And one of the reasons that's important is because the Israelis will do inspections, and they typically find illicit items, including, you know, quadcopter drones and other things. But also they're concerned about how much cement, how many steel pipes, and try to get a sense of, you know, so how much cement is needed to rebuild after Hamas starts a rocket war in 2021 or something like that. And where is that cement being used, and try and follow. Look at how many buildings have been built, about how much cement is that. It gives you a sense of how much cement is being siphoned off for other things. And it's not just cement, it's steel pipes and things like that that Hamas needs for its domestic rocket production capability.
Dr. Matthew Levitt there.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.
So as aid agencies make repeated calls for more supplies to be allowed into Gaza, what are Israel's legal responsibilities, and is the IDF obeying the rules of law? With Hamas accused of using the Palestinian population as human shields, is enough being done to minimize civilian casualties? Barrister Natasha Hausdorff is an expert in international law. She says Israel has a legal responsibility to combat terror.
Israel's responsibilities, just like any democratic elected government, is to keep its citizens safe. As a state, it has to put its citizens' safety as its ultimate priority. But Israel also has obligations under international law, as every state does, including under Security Council Resolution 1373, to combat terror organizations, including to prevent their direct and indirect funding. And a responsibility under the Convention Against Genocide to make sure that never again means never again. And when one takes into consideration Israel's responsibilities to its citizenry to ensure that a genocide is punished and prevented, and also as a bulwark for the rest of the world, then Israel's responsibilities to eradicate Hamas and ensure that something like this does not happen again is multifaceted. And the reason that I say Israel is the bulwark against ISIS-like terror that has erupted here is because they make it clear, although their primary aim is the genocide of the Jews, it is Western liberal democratic values that are at stake here. And those don't just reside in Israel, but they reside in freedom-loving democracies.
What is the legal obligation on Israel in terms of providing aid to an enclave that is controlled by a terror group?
The basic answer is that Israel has no legal obligation. There is no legal obligation to provide a terror organization that is seeking your destruction with any supplies, although Israel has, without obligation, provided about 50% of electricity of their electricity to Gaza, estimates between 5% and 12% of the water to Gaza until, of course, this war began. The only responsibility that Israel has under international law, under Article 23 of the Fourth Geneva Convention, is to facilitate the passage of supplies by third parties if, and there is this qualification, if these supplies are not going to be diverted to the enemy terrorist group. And the difficulty here, of course, is anyone who has watched the situation in Gaza over the last 16 years is that Hamas controls Gaza. They are the men with guns. And there is evidence after evidence of Hamas diverting these supplies for its own uses. And in particular, concern, I would say at the moment, that the supplies that are being allowed in and the recent update from the Prime Minister of Israel is that supplies will be allowed in to the south of Gaza on a continual basis. The real concern is what might be being smuggled in with these supplies, because Hamas has infiltrated humanitarian organizations and NGOs in the Gaza Strip, and it is well known that they smuggle in terror resources to continue their fight against Israeli civilians through these mechanisms. But from an international law perspective, Israel is going over and above its responsibilities and its obligations in international law at the moment. It is beyond the call of duty. It goes further than any other modern military. Or in fact, if one takes the analysis of leading experts like Colonel Richard Kemp, I believe he called Israel the most moral army in the history of warfare to the UN Human Rights Council. And the reason that that analysis stands true is because the IDF takes unprecedented measures to warn civilians. And we have seen this in the context of every operation in Gaza in 2008, in 2014, also with respect to its combating Palestinian Islamic Jihad in 2021. And the measures that Israel takes includes warnings to individual householders, phone calls, text messages, telling civilians, and of course, the Hamas terrorists, giving them the same warning. So the impact on the effectiveness of their ability to strike against these terrorists is undeniably compromised, but they do it to try and minimize civilian collateral damage as much as possible. In addition to those warnings, the precision strikes that Israel adopts are to satisfy the principle under international law of proportionality and reduce the amount of civilian deaths as much as they are possibly able. You may also have heard of the technique, which has been dubbed knock on roof. This involves the IDF firing a warning shot at any building as a final warning for any civilians that have failed to heed the previous warnings that a strike is imminent. And it is because of these measures, and well, of course, we have to consider the other side of this equation, is that Hamas uses civilians as human shields and cynically exploits international public opinion by creating as many civilian deaths in Gaza as possible, that despite all of these efforts by the IDF, there are two things that have resulted. One is undeniably casualties in the Gaza Strip, and the other is that over the last 16 years, Hamas have been able to continue to build up their terror resources. I would issue one final word of warning, if I may, a word of caution, which is that the casualty figures coming out of the Gaza Strip are part of the Hamas propaganda machine. The figures released by the Palestinian Ministry of Health are controlled by Hamas, and they make no distinction between combatants and civilians. And it is truly troubling that we are seeing international media repeating those figures as they repeat other Hamas propaganda, including blaming Israel for strikes against civilians, which has subsequently been proved were in fact Palestinian terrorist groups. So the fact that we are having this amount of misinformation being readily repeated in media around the world is distorting the facts and the truth of this situation, and undeniably impacting public opinion significantly.
Barrister Natasha Hausdorff. Well, should Israel's Operation Swords mission be a success, and as the world waits to see if the war brings in other nations, many are asking what happens after Hamas. Both Israel and the US have accused Iran of being the power behind both Hamas in Gaza and Hezbollah in Lebanon. Before October the 7th, Israel's biggest concern was arguably Tehran's bid to develop its nuclear weapons program. And Israeli government spokesperson Alon Levy says his country is still determined to stop that happening.
Iran is the mastermind behind this global terror network that takes in Hamas in the Gaza Strip, Hezbollah in Lebanon, the Houthis in Yemen. And the leaders of Iran have been very clear that their policy is to destroy the state of Israel, to murder everyone who lives here. Khamenei, the supreme leader, has been tweeting about it quite openly throughout the duration of the war. And Iran is progressing towards trying to get nuclear weapons. And Israel has been absolutely clear there is no way that we are going to let a country that is threatening us with mass murder acquire the weapons to do that. And we're going to continue trying to stop Iran's efforts to acquire nuclear weapons. And we're going to continue trying to block Iran wherever it is in the Middle East, because we're trying to build an alliance of countries in the Middle East for normalization and peace and prosperity and development. And Iran, meanwhile, is extending its tentacles of terror around the Middle East in order to sow chaos and to sow destruction. And I hope that the day after this war, the day after Israel wins, when the nations of the Middle East realize what atrocities Hamas's allies perpetrated on October 7th, that we're going to create more space for the moderate and reasonable nations to come together to stand up to this terrorism, to stand up to this brutality, and work to create a better, safer, more secure and prosperous Middle East for everyone here.
Israeli government spokesperson Alon Levy. That brings an end to episode 3 of Israel's War on Terror. Please let us know in the comments if there are subjects you'd like us to cover in the podcast, or if you have any questions, and we'll do our best to examine them in later episodes. Thanks for listening.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.